Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream Podcast,
where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media.
I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the New Mainstream Podcast. Excited to have an incredible guest with us today, Don Carr, CEO and founder of Mahogany Insights. Don, pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, Mario, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm so excited to get to talk to you today.
Sure. Yeah, we're talking about your professional podcast setup. You're in an actual studio.
I'm in an actual studio. It's true, in Dallas. A friend of mine has a studio called A-List Photography, and he set me up, and I feel ready, and I feel quite professional today, actually.
It's pretty cool. You're going to launch your own show now.
I know. Watch out.
Awesome. Well, lots to talk about. I mean, we met, and it was great to talk to you about your story. But for listeners that might not be familiar with you, can you start sharing about, you know, overview of Mahogany Insights and the mission behind your work, and then how you got there? Like, what, how did you become a founder?
Yeah. So, so I am founder and CEO of Mahogany Insights. We are a strategy and market research firm that really focuses on elevating the voices of Black consumers. You know, we always talk about multicultural consumers in a broader lens, but and we do lots of different research, but our real focus is really on understanding the needs, the wants of Black consumers, helping brands understand how to unlock potential with those consumer groups, and ensuring that those voices really get heard throughout. So, and for me, like, it's funny because I started in research in 2013. I started actually at Ipsos, and it was the summer of 2013. And I was hired. I was the second Black moderator, number two at Ipsos at the time. And that summer, I don't know if you even remember what was going on summer of 2013. You probably don't. But
let me think. 2013, what happened?
Yeah, summer 2013. It was the Trayvon Martin trial, so George Zimmerman trial. And so race was like really in the news a lot. And when I started, there was a lot of like Black research. Like, Black research has kind of been, I have this like slide whenever I do presentations, and it's like a heartbeat thing where it's like going really fast. And I always say that's like Black research, like sometimes it's up and then it's down and kind of flat lines and then it goes up again. And often it's related to what's going on in the news. So it's kind of reactive for a lot of brands and companies, particularly back then. So I started and I was doing a lot of Black research, and then it kind of fell off and I sort of moved into cultural immersion. So I would take clients to Turkey or China or Japan, and we would immerse in what it's like to live there or wash clothes or whatever. But I always, regardless, I always had the role of kind of the Black consumer specialist. So in their center of excellence, that was one of my roles. And then 2020 just, you know, changed. 2020 changed everything. I like say 2020 was a verb, not a noun. And it just kind of happened to everyone. And what I noticed when I was doing research at that point was like the clients were all wanting research, of course. But the difference was what I was seeing in the consumers, like the respondents. So I had been doing this for now like 7 years, and you kind of hear very similar things. You kind of know what you're going to hear when you're talking to Black consumers about things. There was a fundamental shift in how these consumers were viewing themselves, how they exist in the world, how they were viewing brands and the responsibility of brands, and particularly for Gen Z, who were coming to age in such a really uncertain time. There was a really big shift. And
is this among all consumers or Black consumers?
Black consumers in particular. So I mean, 2020 was, it happened to everybody. So I think general, there was a shift. But what I saw happening with Black consumers was that, you know, I talk about the fact that I feel like there was a trauma that happened to most Black people at that time. Many people lost someone personally, like that, you know, we over-indexed in loss from COVID. We were affected by what happened with George Floyd. I mean, in a ways that were not just we saw something happen, but many of us were personally affected. So people talked about even things like, well, I got a promotion as a result of everything that happened, but it actually doesn't feel good that I got a promotion because it feels like somebody had to die for me to get it. And so I felt like I was, I mean, we're talking about water or like some random thing. And then people were just kind of unloading these really deep emotional things. There was also the political environment going on at the time, and it was just a lot. And so it felt like there's a fundamental shift that is like at the core, like people are trauma, they're reacting to something that I felt was going to be permanent. And I felt it too. And so I left because I wanted, like, I sort of see this as my form of activism, right? Like our form of making sure our voices are heard. I'm really good at listening to voices. I'm really good at translating that. And so while I'm not necessarily the one that's out on the street picketing and things like that, I can be like, I do have a seat at the table and I can help brands understand how to take this and translate it into something that works for them, but also works for the community. So that's how we started.
Wow, that's big. And so you mentioned the heartbeat. I mean, I think it's similar for, right, us in multicultural and mm-hmm. Latino research. It's the same thing. It ebbs and flows. But I wonder, like, 2020, I agree with you, is a fundamental shift for everybody, yeah. especially for Black people in the U.S.
Did you feel like you saw that too in on the Hispanic side as well?
Yeah, but I think in a different way. I mean, I think there was like a general awareness of race and America, but race and ethnicity among Latinos is so different and varied. Mm-hmm. And not to say that Black consumers right. have the same experience. It's varied as well. But, you know, with Latinos, right. it's like 20 plus different countries and
right.
Other aspects there. But yeah, definitely felt a shift there. But what I was going to ask you is like, I'm envisioning that heartbeat that you were mentioning over the different points. And I see that throughout my career as well. Do you feel like we're on a downslope right now? Because 2020, there was so much awareness from brands. And now, not only do I see a downslope, there's almost a pushback.
Yes.
And, you know, against DE&I. Like, yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Like,
you are so right. So what's funny is that when I started in 2021, it was still kind of up, right? And I had been doing this with Ipsos, so it was still up and, you know, et cetera. And then 2022 was hard. It was a hard year. Like people started to kind of, you know, oh, do we still need this? And that's how that heartbeat always kind of was. Like it's as long as it's in the news, it's kind of big. We're going to do research. We need to understand this consumer, like, et cetera. And then it sort of like tails off. But for me, I made a conscious decision because it got to a point where I felt like I was going into clients trying to prove why they should support Black consumers. And as someone who's doing this, this is my purpose. This is my mission. If you look at our beliefs, like, you know, one of them, our five beliefs, they are really driven by the fact that, you know, one of them is about specifically my daughter, that I want her to grow up in a world where she sees herself included. And so when I would go into these places and I'm like, these people don't really care. Like, you know, it's numbers. It's not that they don't probably personally care. It's just from a business standpoint, you know, they don't. And I worked, my background before this was at P&G. I worked in brand. So I get that there's a lot of different factors that come together, but I was taking it personal. And so I made a conscious choice in early 2023, no, maybe the end of 2022, that I'm only talking to people who already know that this is an issue. It is not my job to try to convince others that they should support us. I can't do it. There are other people who can, but I believe there are enough brands out there. There are enough people out there who want to do the work, who maybe don't know how, who maybe don't have the the knowledge, the data, they need a little push, but they know that it's important. And that's where I choose to focus. And so I don't think that I see the same downtick that other people do, because I don't go after those people who are probably flighty to start out with. So the people who are in our circle, who, you know, we do business with, are people who are committed either to just learning and or in kind of going from there. Now, the other thing I will say that has shifted, that has been new, is that there's this shift like of trying to go from Black specific or Hispanic specific research to like, let's put everybody in a room and be kind of all together again and do this all collectively, because we shouldn't be singling out people or, you know, what have you, or like we're kind of all for one. And so trying to educate that by doing these specific types of research, you are not actually segregating, you're actually making it a space where you can get much clearer insights. That's been more of the education that I've seen, and some of the changes I've seen as well. Yeah,
that's great. And so I can tell you, we just finished up some research, because we were worried about that like there was the DEI and backlash, and mm-hmm. You know, are we going to see a move away? And thankfully, the research shows. So we talked to a little bit under 100 marketers, and asked them about how this DEI backlash is affecting. And overall, multicultural spend is increasing. So,
oh, awesome.
your focus on only people that know about it is a good path forward. And I think what's happening is like, smart brands know mm-hmm. what the future of this country looks like, and whether they say it outwardly on a website or whatever is one thing, but where they're actually yeah. spending the marketing dollars is another. And so that's kind of what we're betting on.
Yeah, for sure. And I can really see it where we're getting a lot of questions from companies that would be looking at the very young, like the Gen Alphas. That's where we're starting to see a lot of interest. And it's because they are feeling it first, right? They're seeing the demographic shifts even bigger with those younger, you know, those younger consumers or future consumers coming through. So, so I think you're absolutely right on that.
Yeah. Well, talking about Gen Z, like, I think they're one of the generations, I mean, lots of great things I love about them, but they're seeking authenticity.
Yes.
And I think that's something that's thrown around a lot in multicultural, Black, Latino. How do you be authentic? Like, what's your perspective on that? Like, how yeah. Black consumers are I feel like, especially Black Gen Z, multicultural Gen Z, are seeking authenticity. Like, mm-hmm. how does that influence brand strategy or research or insights from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, we get this question so much that we did a whole framework around it, because it was like everyone kept coming asking, hey, this is the research question. We want to be more authentic. Are we authentic? Are we showing up that way? How do you define it? What's the checklist for authenticity? And so, you know, we've gone back and looked, and like for Black consumers in particular, there are very few brands that consistently show up as quote unquote authentic. Like sometimes people are like, who's best in class? Nike. And then you don't get a whole lot, maybe Target sometimes, maybe this, maybe that, but it's very few that you get that come up consistently. However, when Black consumers talk about what it means to be authentic, they actually do say the same things. Whatever brand they chose, they tend to describe it the same way. And so what we often will tell clients is that showing up authentically is not hard, but it is more complex than often people think. So by the time they come to us, they are asking a question about authenticity, but what they're really asking about is like, is the representation correct, right? They've already shot yeah. the whatever it is. We're all at the end. We've got the content. We just want to know, do we have enough Black people? Is it varied, you know, enough, etc. And what we try to tell them is that when consumers are thinking about authenticity, they tend to describe brands in three ways. So they talk about the fact that the brand makes them feel seen, and that is a very specific terminology that is much more about, less about representation and more about feeling that they're part of the brand, that's often related to values. So if you use Nike, for example, like their values are very much aligned to the Black consumer target that they go after. They are, so how they talk, doesn't matter if they're actually talking to Black consumers or white consumers or general market or Hispanic or whatever, they're saying something that still resonates. And so this idea that like we're just connected in this way. So we often try to get clients to say, like, you got to actually start with you. You want to jump to what they want, but you actually really, for this consumer group to be authentic, you got to start with you and make sure that what you are valuing actually makes sense and you're not trying to like force fit it. And then the second thing is around investing. And so we call that, so when we write it, it's invest. And I always capitalize the vest part because vesting, you know, when you're in corporate world for our corporate world is about time, right? Like that you're not just showing up and putting a little bit in and then taking it out, that you're there over an extended amount of time and then you get that return. And that's often what we need to see in the community, because they are so used to brands coming in and out, right? They come in, you give a few money, you take what it is, and then you leave. And so there's a belief about that. And so brands who show up authentically have this, not even a whole lot, just a consistency that they're showing up in the community. And then the last thing we talk about is empower, and that this group in particular, particularly Gen Z, is all about wanting to, they kind of talk about it in two ways. One is the optimism. They are eternally optimism in themselves, not in America. America, not that great in terms of optimism, but in themselves they are. And when you talk to them about that, it's because they feel in control. Like, so I've had, you know, one of the things we hear a lot actually is this sense of what I learned in 2020 is no one's coming to save me. Right? I have to save myself. We have to save ourselves. And so this push of like, we have to be the ones in control. We don't want a brand, a company, what have you, to save us. We want to have the tools to be able to save ourselves. So you hear that. So when we talk about some of those brands, it's a lot about empowerment too. Like those three things, making them feel seen, investing consistently, and making them the hero in the story are actually really, that have to come together in a way that is consistent with your brand values, are really how you start to create that authenticity.
I love that. I love the vest in investing. And you know, mm-hmm. that's because investing so much of the time, I think as a business owner and companies, it's just money.
Yes.
But really the critical thing is time over time, right?
Yes.
Like, I think that goes for any consumer. Like, the authenticity one is, okay, you can have a great campaign that's diverse and reflective, but it's one or two commercials versus years of investment over time. Like that's real.
And I think about that when I started, I'm so going to date myself right now. When I started at P&G so long ago, I was one of the first, my brand was the first brand, one of the first brands that was in this multicultural challenge. So P&G had decided they were going to invest 20%, 12 brands had to invest 20% of their marketing spend. And it was a brand I was on at the time. And I remember, like, of course I was Black, so I got put on that one, you know, just cause like, and I wanted to, but also I was afraid that like, oh, I'm going to get pigeonholed into this and this doesn't really seem like it's a big thing, etc. And all it meant at that time was like, you shoot an ad. And so I was on Tampax at the time back then. And so we would have a blonde in the ad she was white, blonde hair, blue eyed, because it had to go with the packaging. And we would pull her out and we would put a Black person in and that was it. No other changes to it. And then we would run it in Essence and that was how we would spend. But like over time, so you talk about investing, like what P&G learned just in starting there and where they are today in terms of the type of ads, the authenticity that the brands that they have are connecting with this group. It just really shows, like they saw it then, right? They saw the numbers and the data and they're like, we have to do this whether you like it or not. And they're seeing that return. And so I think that idea of investing, like it does take time to build a level of trust in a community that hasn't always benefited from positions of power, right? And just being very real and honest about it. And that gets that history is something that gets passed on and on and on. It doesn't just kind of like go away with the next generation. It gets really embedded in who we are.
No, that's, yeah, that's true. It's generational for sure. Mm-hmm. What, so you mentioned a little bit about, the power of black consumers. I mean, reading, going over your bio, you shared some really interesting numbers. Can you share some numbers about how, you know, how important black consumers are in the, as an American demographic?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few numbers that we talk about. The first is that the population growth with Black consumers, it's an interesting thing because the census, there's always two numbers with the census. You guys might see it, or you might see it with Hispanic as well, but in for so long, race was a zero-sum game up until the 90s. So you were Black. If you chose Black, you couldn't choose anything else. And so until recently, where people were able to choose multiple races, it sort of distorted sometimes the numbers that you see. So sometimes you'll see the percentage of Black people at 12% with like a 14% growth rate. And other times you'll see where they've actually included people who've selected that they identify with as Black and other races. And they include that the percentage growth is around 30%. So it's a much bigger percentage growth, particularly with the younger populations. Black consumers are younger, so we tend to be, I think 30% of us are under the age of 30, so much younger. And that drives a lot of the influence on social media and things like that. So we tend to have a higher share of voice on social media, mostly because we're more likely to talk about brands while we're there, and et cetera. One of the pieces, though, that I really like to talk about is the $300 billion gap. And so this is a study that McKinsey did back in 2021, where they were trying to understand the quantify the gap of spending. So within Black consumers versus everyone else. And so they held constant, like everything from disposable income. You know, we tend to have a lower disposable income. Again, I talked about being a smaller single family homes, things like that. When they took all of that into account, they still said there was about a $300 billion gap in spending, which they have accounted for as what I call access and agency, right? So this idea of like not having access to products and services that they actually would want. So they just buy less of it or buy it less frequently or don't buy it at all. And then what I call agency, which is really that the way in which they want to use the product necessarily isn't developed for them to use it that way. So they're not actually able to get the benefits that they need from those products. So they're not buying it as much. And so for me, like as a former brander, I love that because I'm like, this is your lowest hanging fruit. Like if someone told me that instead of having to create some new product or a service or what have you in a room, that I need to figure out how to get people who buy me to buy me more, that is a much easier proposition. And so we try to get clients to quantify that for their brand. So we will often say, like, go look at your numbers. Many brands can pull their numbers for Hispanic and Black and look at household penetration or look at shares and volume, and they just haven't done it before. And if you can look at that and you see a gap in terms of they should be about 14% of your volume or et cetera, if you see a gap there, that's where there's a potential opportunity for you. And that's where you should be looking at potential growth ideas. And it feels like low hanging fruit. So we often will try to get clients to start to quantify that. Cause I feel like this doesn't work. Like this is not doing multicultural marketing or support or things like that. This is not like a nonprofit kind of thing, right? Like you're doing it because it should be building your business and pushing your brand forward. And if it doesn't, and maybe you shouldn't be doing it, right? But I believe strongly that it pushes your business forward. So I like for clients to be able to quantify it for themselves so that they can see what that potential return on investment can be.
Can you give us, I know we can't share clients, but would love to hear like a blinded case study of like your favorite or most successful or most interesting project and yeah, and maybe how it helped their business.
Okay, so favorite, all of them are my favorite. All my clients are my favorite, but but I will say one of the ones that I that I really am most excited about because it's been in the market for a while and it's still doing well is some work that we did for skincare products. And so this was about 2 years ago. And they came to us because they actually were pushed by one of the retailers to sort of figure out how they could create more inclusive products in this particular category. And they didn't think that they could, to be honest with you. It's just like a very niche category. And so we were able to uncover, like, just through looking at it from a different lens, like the language is different for Black consumers and how we view our skin and how we think about what is good about our skin. We just use different language for it. It's not really that it is different. We just sometimes use different language. And so being able to talk about that and learn from consumers, we were able to uncover like a totally different niche that kind of fell within the category, but was an unmet need. And we actually ended up doing 3 months. Like, it was a rapid fire rotation. We did 3 months where we brought in panels every month and we built this with the client. Like, so the consumers and the client literally built everything from the look of the product itself to the packaging to the communication. It was true co-creation, and they got that out within 8 months, I mean, which is unheard of for like a product development. And so I followed up with them a little bit later because it was only supposed to be for one retailer, and they were like, it did so well. They ended up launching two. One of them is now their number one selling SKU, period. And the other one did so well in that retailer that they took it national. And so I think like something that they thought was going to be this small thing, that they were able to uncover this unmet need. And it goes back to this like representation mattering so much, even in the rooms in which you guys are doing like the work and brainstorming. Because if you don't have representation, even in that room, you can write off like, oh, this will never work for this group, right? When in reality, it's like, well, it's just the way in which you talk about it. But this group absolutely has a need that falls into this segment. So, so that's one of the things I talk about. I was telling you that I worked on Disney for their crew. We did a project a while ago for them, but I was just on a Disney cruise. And, I love so much about Disney. Kind of like P&G, like they really care about the customer experience and they're really all about feedback. And there's a lot of surveys that you take when you're on the cruise and everything. But one of the things that frustrated me was had to do with representation. So like my daughter, there's this thing called Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique. Do you know what that is?
It's like, I think I know the song Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo.
Yes, from Cinderella. So there's a boutique for girls. I lost my light for some reason, but there's a boutique for where girls can go in and become princesses. And so it's a whole thing. You get a fairy godmother. You sit. They do their hair. They do their nails. They talk to them about princesses and what princess they want to be and all of that. And so my daughter's 5. So I took her in to do this boutique thing. And so I was very clear because they do their hair. My daughter has curly hair. And so there was a black woman there that I just wanted someone who knew how to do hair. I honestly didn't care as long as they were good at the hair. And I already been told they're very good at ethnic or any kind of hair and curly hair, tight curls, etc. But what got me was that there's a point where they said, okay, princess, now you have to find your princess hair. And this is like a magical hair. It's going to make you so beautiful, et cetera. And they present this book to her and there's no hair like hers. And I saw my daughter figure that out. Like, I saw her look and not see her hair. And she chose this other like long pink hair or whatever. But that night when I tried to get it taken off her, she said to me like, mommy, I just hate my hair. And that like, still, like, I get really emotional about that now because, like, this is my job, right? And so I hear that so much from people who are older and how long it takes them to love their hair, love their skin, etc. And I think I thought I wouldn't have to deal with that with my daughter. But there are these cues that, like, you still have as much as Disney does to be inclusive. Like, there were little Black girls on the pictures, but none of the princesses have hair like hers. Like, none of the work, you know, I get it, but I still feel like you could have had one little bow that was just a little tighter curl that even if she didn't choose it, she could still feel like her hair was represented as one of the beautiful princesses there. And I think that's just where the representation matters. I don't think it's on purpose. I think it's just no one is there to say that when they're making these decisions and choices. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one thing, I mean, I'm super passionate about as well as representation. I mean, especially in our industry, right? Like market research is interesting because we are tasked mm-hmm. with informing sometimes really big decisions. Like you mentioned, you had a whole product launch, things that impact children's images of themselves, adults' mm-hmm. images. And, you know, the market research industry, I mean, let's be real, right? There's not too many of us, right? I mean, I'm talking mm-hmm. to Ipsos second Black moderator ever, right? You know, which is kind of crazy, like, you know, and so, how do you feel about that? I mean, in terms of representation in our industry I don't know, I mean, any ideas or what?
I know. I mean, so I was just at the Quirks conference in Dallas a couple weeks ago, and I had my research assistant came in. She's from New Orleans. She came to Dallas. It's her first time doing anything like that. And I remember her being so shocked that there was like very few of us there. I think the industry is somewhere, but for Black market researchers, is somewhere between 4% and 5%, which is lower even than in marketing. And so, you know, to your point, right, like we get a seat at the table, but a lot of times those conversations and decisions that the marketers, the advertisers, the other people are making, the insights people are making, they're making based on our analysis. And we're often it's impossible for us to all be in those rooms where the analysis in particular is happening. So like one of the things we've really been looking at is, A, how do we make it? There's so much here, because I feel like part of it is how do we make it easier and clearer for our voice to be heard in the rooms where we're actually not in? Like, how do we create guts for, I kind of call it a gut for the people who are doing analysis. And I use the example, like when I worked in baby care, I didn't have a kid, and nobody, I think at that time in baby care, when I worked at P&G I didn't work at on baby care P&G, but when I worked for them at Ipsos, like none of those people had babies. There were a lot of men even on there, but we had a gut for the consumer because all we did was listen to those women all the time. And I think what's missing is that you don't always hear the voices. So you don't have that. And it is really hard, because what happens is sometimes you get the right data, but then the wrong interpretation of it, because you're using your own understanding of what you think is going on. We do a case study about exactly that, like where there is so people came to us and said, oh, like, you know, we're a premium brand and we think that the reason people aren't buying us is that we're just too expensive and they don't want to spend the money, et cetera. And it was something completely different. But there is a perception, right, that comes into that. So I think that's a big thing. And then the other big thing I think is that we have to make it more easier to hear these voices. I think that they're really, for us, I mean, you're doing great work. You've got Think Now, like you've got panel, people can come and have a central place to hear Hispanic voices, and that, you know, there's something there. We don't have that yet, I think, for Black consumers, and it's more expensive. It's hard. It's hard to recruit them, because they're not in the databases like we need them to be. And so they cost more and it takes longer. And so there's really almost like a tax that gets put on brands who really do want to learn. And I think we've got to figure out a way to make that more cost effective and easier and faster, so that we can get those voices heard the way that they need to be.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, and that time, and you know, that's what I built my career on the Hispanic side. And I guess, yeah, I mean, that's a good way to put it. There's a tax. I mean, for Latinos, there's privacy concerns. I would assume it's similar for Black consumers.
Similar.
for different reasons. And I don't know, just like research companies don't want to touch that for whatever reason.
Yeah. And I think it's what, I know we talked about this before, because we're, you know, we're trying to do something similar for Black consumers to have this place where we can create exactly that for brands to be able to come in and connect with the consumers. And I know one of the things I think I asked you, like, why do you think this doesn't exist? Because it's so shocking to me. And I think it's, you know, when you're only 4% of the industry, it is hard to, no one is really, they're able to do it, right? Like you kind of talk about what's so great about what you guys have built is that it is really authentic to who you are. I love when you said, I'm just like quoting you all over the place, but I love when you said the last time about how you built a database that I think your grandmother or someone would want to participate in. And I think that makes it so authentic. And we have, it's kind of our responsibility as the few Black people in this industry who can come authentically and speak to our community and say why it matters, why you need to be part of the story and the solution, and why we're going to eliminate the excuses for why brands aren't talking to us, because we're going to put you, we're going to make that easily available for you, but you have to sign up, you have to be participating. It's part of your responsibility. Like we, you know, we talk about empowering and the resiliency and all of the things that our community really appreciates, but we haven't utilized that in a way to allow them to have power in this industry the way that I think that they should.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we're talking about Black consumers. I mean, you're talking about, such an influential consumer that it is kind of crazy that there is no
yet
panel, right?
so excited
to see what you build.
Yes.
But this has been amazing. Believe it or not, we're at a almost at our end of our time here.
That's so fun. I know.
Yeah, it's been super fun. If people want to connect with you, what's the best way to get a hold of you and follow your work online?
Yeah, so we try to stay pretty active on LinkedIn. So you can follow me there at Dawn V Carr. So V like Victor and then C-A-R-R. MahoganyInsights.com is there. You can email me. I don't care. It's Dawn@MahoganyInsights.com. I'd love to chat if there's any needs or any questions or anything that anyone has for follow-ups.
Awesome. Dawn, thank you so much for joining. It's been awesome talking to you. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform.